And welcome back to Talk Louisiana on this Monday morning. In 1942, during World War II, after Pearl Harbor was attacked, the Army, the U.S. Army, was desperate for pilots to deliver newly built training aircraft to the flight schools in the south of the country. And in the summer of 1942, 28 civilian women pilots volunteered to do this, and they formed the country's first female squadron. So between 1942 and 1944, nearly 1,100 women were trained to fly, first in Houston, but ultimately at Avenger Field in Sweetwater, Texas. They were called the Women Air Force Service Pilots, or WASPs. And these women flew every aircraft that the Army had in its arsenal at that time. They ferried aircraft, they transported equipment, they flight tested aircraft before male pilots were allowed to fly the airplanes again after they were being prepared. So at the end of the war, when male pilots needed jobs again, these women's unit was shut down. They were sent home, and it would be more than 30 years before they were even recognized officially as veterans. Sandra Rigdon Spears grew up near and around Avenger Field in Sweetwater, Texas. Her father was Rigdon Edwards Jr. He served as a primary flight instructor for this group of women pilots. And Sandra met many of these women. She serves as a volunteer and I believe president of the board of the WASP Museum in Sweetwater, Texas. And Sandra, it is an absolute pleasure for us to have you today. Welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Thank you so much, Julie.
It's really good to talk with you. And I think a lot of people may not have heard of all the things that the WASPs did, the Women Air Force Service Pilots. And this was really a part of your life in your younger years. What do you remember about Women Air Force Service Pilots? And why did these women want to fly for the U.S. Air Force?
Well, at that time, it was the Army Air Force. The Air Force didn't become separate from the Army until 1947, but they were here to fly. They loved to fly, and they loved their country, and this was one of the ways that they could serve their country during the war. This was a civilian program, so that meant that they had to pay their way to get here to Sweetwater to train. If they washed out, then that meant they had to pay their way to get home. If they were killed during the time that they were in service, and there were 38 women that died, and they had to, the other girls would take up a collection to send them home on the train with an escort to return the body to the family. They were not allowed to have a flag draped on their casket because they were not considered military at that time. So there were a lot of injustices that the women went through, but they loved what they were doing. Even after the program shut down, they said they would fly for a dollar just so that they could keep on flying and doing what they had been doing.
Wow. Now, Sweetwater, Texas is about 230 miles southeast of Amarillo, about 180 miles west of Fort Worth. It's still, I think, a pretty small town. What are some of your earliest memories of your father being a flight instructor there for this unit?
Well, what I remember is taking him to work every day. My sister and I would be in the back seat of the car, usually still in our jammies, and we'd drive through the gate. And the guard would come out of the guard shack and shine his flashlight in the back of the car. And when he see it was just us, well, he would wave us on into the base, and we would take Daddy wherever he needed to go on the flight line or wherever. Then when it was time for him to come home in the afternoon, he would buzz the house three times. In other words, fly over the house three times. And we'd say, Mama, it's time to go get Daddy. So that was our cell phone at the time.
What were some of the particular challenges that you remember facing these women in their military flying careers that were different from what the male pilots at that time faced?
Well, as I said, this was a civilian program. And the women already had to have their pilot's license before they were eligible to enter the program. And at that time, there were about 3,000 women in the United States that had their pilot's license. And out of those, 1,836 were selected to come here to Sweetwater to train. And the men could come and train from the ground up, but the women already had to have their pilot's license. They had to pay $1.65 a day for room and board out of their paycheck, which was $174 at that time. They had to pay for all their uniforms, everything, which the men didn't have to do. The men didn't really want them to be pilots. They felt like they were taking jobs from other men. However, the men were needed to go to combat, and so this was a way to free up the men so that they could go to combat. The WASP were limited in what they could do. They could only fly from sunup to sundown, and they could not fly outside the continental United States. And the men played tricks on them a lot. They'd put sugar in their gas tank. They would, when they were up flying with them, they would try to play tricks on them and so forth. And they were, it was just not a real good atmosphere for the women. Now, my father was a very patient man, and he had always been around women. And his friends, the other males, would say, "Man, why are you teaching those women to fly? Those women can't fly those big airplanes." And he said, "Well, look, I've had four sisters, and I have three daughters. I've been around women all my life, and the women are better pilots than the men because they read the directions, they listen to what I tell them to do, and then they do it. They follow my instructions." He said, "Now, when I go home, that doesn't happen." So he was...
Did you ever want to fly, Sandra?
Well, my dad had a plane while we were growing up, and if we went to Amarillo or Wichita Falls or Fort Worth or somewhere, we flew. And in the 40s, that was kind of an unusual thing, but that's just what we did. But every time we went up, I threw up. So Daddy always had an ice cream carton handy for me to make a deposit in, because he knew it was going to happen. And I just never really enjoyed flying that much because of that problem.
Do you remember meeting some of these women pilots during your growing up years?
Oh, yes. They were not supposed to come to the instructors' houses, but they did. And Mother said what they really wanted to do was lie down on a real bed. And when you see the kind of cots that they slept on every night, you can understand that. They wanted to take a tub bath, and they wanted to play with my sister and me, because many of them left children at home whenever they came to train and came to be a WASP. But they had a really good relationship with my family as well as other instructors and other people in town, too.
If you want to
they
be
would
a...
often...
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sandra.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to tell our listeners, if they want to be a part of this conversation, they can call 1-877-217-5757. It's 1-877-217-5757. And Sandra will be hanging on with us for one additional segment after our news break at 9:30. But Sandra, you actually were involved with starting or at least supporting the Women Air Force Service Pilots Museum, which is currently open in Sweetwater, Texas. And I want to tell a little bit to the folks that are listening after our news break here at 9:30. I want to tell them a little bit about what the WASP Museum does to keep this history alive, some events where you can go and be involved in a run there to support keeping this museum alive, and a little bit more about how important this unit was to the military. And welcome back to Talk Louisiana. I'm Julie Baxter Payer, filling in for Jim Engster today. We're so privileged to be joined again by Sandra Rigdon Spears, who is the daughter of one of the primary flight instructors for the Women's Air Force Service Pilots, or WASPs. Rigdon Edwards Jr. was her father. He helped to train some of the nearly 1,100 women who actually flew in the civilian unit. But Sandra, there was quite a battle after the unit was disbanded in 1944 to get these women in recognition as veterans. Tell me a little bit about what you remember about that battle.
Well, whenever the unit was disbanded in December of 1944, their records were sealed. And when people would ask about what they did during the war and so forth, they got to where they just wouldn't tell their story because nobody believed them. But then in the early 70s, when women were being admitted to the military academies, and they were saying, well, these would be the first women to fly military airplanes, the WASP stood up and said, wait a minute, we did that in World War II. And they started the battle to try to get recognized as veterans. And it took them 5 years to get a bill through Congress. Senator Barry Goldwater in Arizona had flown with the WASP during World War II, and he knew what good pilots they were, and he was the one that pushed so hard to get them recognized as veterans. In 1977, President Jimmy Carter signed the bill that gave them privileges as veterans.
Which meant basically GI Bill benefits, right, and other veterans
yes.
benefits? Okay.
Right.
And so are any of these women still alive, Sandra?
Yes, they are. We think that there's between 35 and 40 that are still living, and they're all between 95 and 105.
Oh, wow.
And so as they say, they're tough old birds.
And
they
go ahead.
Still love to be involved in things at the museum and so forth.
So tell us about the WASP Museum. Were you involved in starting that museum? And what? How can people support that museum?
Well, yes, I was involved. In 2002, WASP Deanie Parrish and her daughter Nancy came to Sweetwater to give a program at the Rotary Club. And they were, part of their program was about how they felt like that they needed to have a museum here in Sweetwater at Avenger Field, right where the women had trained. And the community was inspired by their talk, and we began to try to see what we could do to get a museum started. And so in the summer of 2003, applied for our charter, articles of incorporation, so that we could have a museum. The Chamber of Commerce gave us some money so that we could get a post office box and do mailings and so forth to support the museum. And in 2005, we were able to open the museum in a building that was actually owned by the city, a hangar that had been Sweetwater Municipal Airport. And from that time, we have grown until recently. Last year, we opened another hangar, built a new hangar that would be an air-conditioned space where we could have events and have our archives and so forth.
And you have a run or a race, sort of a fundraiser around
yes.
Veterans Day this year, right?
Yes, on November the 10th, we'll have our run for the WASP, and it'll have a 5K plus a walk and a children's run and so forth, and it will be there by the museum, and we've done this for about 10 years now, and we have people that come from all over. You can register for the race. I think it's $35 for adults. And maybe 15 for children. And you can go on our website, which is WASP museum.org and register online. Or it, that also gives you the phone number and everything that you can call the museum and register that way.
That's wonderful, Sandra. We're joined now by Randy from Zachary, a caller who's calling in. Randy, welcome to Talk Louisiana. Do you have a question for Sandra?
Yes, I have a question. Did you ever meet Jacqueline Cochran? And I thank you for your service. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
Yes, I did meet Jacqueline Cochran several times. In fact, the house that they rented for Jacqueline Cochran to stay in was just three houses up from where I lived in Sweetwater. And so I met Jacqueline Cochran many times. She was a lovely lady, very courageous. She tried to instill in the women that they were ladies first, and then they were pilots. And so she was very insistent that whenever their plane came to a stop, they needed to fix their hair, put on their lipstick, whatever they do, primp before they got out of the plane.
It was a different era. It was a different era back then. I just want to share with our listeners, too, how I sort of got interested in this whole unit of women. There's a novel. It was published a few years back by Fanny Flagg. It's just a novel, but it's called The All-Girl Filling Station Last Reunion. And it has a number of storylines in it, but it references this unit. It talks about a woman who has some of the similar experiences that some of these real-life women who flew in this unit. And so I would just recommend that novel to kind of, for folks wanting to dip their toes into what was this unit of courageous women flyers all about. And then, of course, that got me interested in looking up what this WASP museum was. And it's just thrilling, Sandra, that you're keeping this history alive. Do you find good support from around Texas and the southern region, your neighboring states as well?
Oh, yeah. We have support from all over the United States and several foreign countries, too. And we have visitors every year from all over the United States and other and foreign countries also. But we have a lot of support, not only from this area, but from the surrounding states. In fact, we have a little connection to Louisiana in that one of our archivists, Justin Hesterly, is from Louisiana. He graduated from college a couple of years ago and came here to Sweetwater to work on our archives.
Well, that's wonderful. We're helping in a small way anyway, and I'm glad that he's there to help. What do you think when you look at the military today and a lot of the strides in the various branches for women? Are you encouraged by what you're seeing, Sandra?
Oh, yes. And if you ask the military women today, especially the pilots, they will tell you if it had not been for what the WASP did in World War II, they wouldn't be where they were today and doing what they love to do today. Because the WASP laid the groundwork. They were the ones that got everything started and proved that women really could fly military aircraft.
And really the ending or the disbanding of the unit seemed to happen when maybe the jobs became sparser for male pilots at the end of the war, right? Is that the reason?
Right. The war was winding down. Pilots were coming back from Europe and the Pacific and so forth, and they thought, well, these women have our jobs, and we want our jobs back. And so, you know, that's what happened. That they were disbanded so that the men could take over the jobs. But there was still much more work that needed to be done, especially in delivering planes and so forth, than, you know, the men could handle. So it was kind of a bittersweet kind of stop to the program because the women still wanted to fly.
And it seemed when you read about that era and you lived through it, there was really a spirit of everybody wanted to do their part, whether at home or in the service. Was it not at that time for the World War II? Tell us about what you remember about that.
Well, there was so much support for people doing anything. In fact, a lot of these women, their husbands were in the Air Force also, and are some branch of the military, and maybe their husband had been killed. And they thought, well, this is a way that I can take over and do something in his memory. And so that was a situation with some of them. And they were just, you know, the townspeople, everybody had to work together. And sometimes I worry about what would happen today if we would have the same esprit de corps, or whatever you want to call it, to do the things that everybody did. There were, here at Avenger Field, there were women mechanics. The men were gone, and they had to train. Somebody had to do the jobs. And so many of the things that were unheard of at that time were jobs that women took over.
Sandra Rigdon Spears, you're an inspiration to talk to. The memory of your father and how well he treated these women as he was training them to fly in the Women's Air Force Service Pilots Unit, as it later became known. Thank you so much for joining us today. WaspMuseum.org is the website you can go to if you want to help support that museum and keep this history alive. When we come back, Michelle LeClaire is going to join us, once a poster girl for Scientology Church. She says why she struggled to express her new identity in her own church, how she feared for her safety as she tried to leave. That story is coming up next on Talk Louisiana here on 89.3 FM.